Hello, friends. Welcome to episode number 28 of Ray Keating's Authors and Entrepreneurs Podcast. I have a special guest for this episode who I will tell you about in just a moment. Before we dive in, I'm going to do my usual song and dance by way of introduction. I'm Ray Keating, your host and the author of the Pastor Stephen Grant novels. I've been fortunate in that 2018 has really been my most productive year as a book author, which has been nice. And that has included three new Pastor Stephen Grant installments, Reagan Country, which is the eighth full-length novel in the series, and then two short stories, Heroes and Villains and the brand new Shifting Sands. So now I've got 10 Pastor Stephen Grant mysteries and thrillers. All are available in paperback and for the Kindle at Amazon.com, or you can look for signed books over at RayKeatingOnline.com, and we've got a sale going on right now. I also just published The Realistic Optimist To-Do List and Calendar 2019. It's a mouthful, but it is also available at Amazon.com and at RayKeatingOnline.com if you would like it signed. This is different from my previous books. I've said perhaps it's more of a productivity tool than a traditional book. It's a planner. It's a calendar. But it's all based around this rather simple system of to-do lists that I use. It's helped better organize my life, helped me to get things done, and I think others can benefit from it as well. In addition, you could check out my book, Chuck Versus the Business World, Business Tips on TV. Hopefully that'll help your career a bit. And it's based on the television show Chuck. That's also available in paperback and for the Kindle at Amazon.com. I'm also the editor, publisher, and columnist for something called DisneyBizJournal.com. And over there, we talk about news analysis. We offer news analysis and commentary on the Disney entertainment business. So please visit that website. I'm also an economist. I taught MBA students for 10 years about entrepreneurship, the economy, assorted management topics. So that was a great experience. And hopefully I gained some knowledge along the way. So, and while, as I say each time, while this podcast is mainly targeted at readers and book lovers in general, authors, aspiring authors, entrepreneurs, and aspiring entrepreneurs, everyone is, of course, welcome to tune in. Now, I'm very pleased to have Tyrell Bramwell as my guest, with this being actually his second time on the show. So he is a repeat offender, should we say that? he's a Lutheran pastor. He is a Lutheran pastor at a parish in California. And he is, in fact, an author. The first time he was on the show, we spoke about two of his books. Those books are The Gift and the Defender, Lumen Legends Book 1. And the other one was Finding the Truth in Story, Grimm's Fairy Tales Book 1. He has since published two more books that we're going to chat about now. One is titled Come In, We Are Closed. And the second is The World of the Wazzlewoods, A Fern and Dale Fairy Tale Book Number 1. We're also going to talk about some of the ways Pastor Bramwell has worked to make these books a reality and how he's worked to get the word out about these new tomes. Ty, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Ray. I really appreciate the opportunity. It's fantastic. A repeat offender.
That's right. It's fantastic to have you back. So let's dive right in. Let's start by you telling us about the new books. And why don't you start off with Come In, We Are Closed.
Okay. Yeah. Come In, We're Closed launched on Reformation Day, October 31st. And it is it's kind of a novella. It's a short novel, a dialogue between two characters. And it's kind of interesting. As you were just going down the list of my books, I just realized, I probably knew this before, but it just kind of hit me that each one is in its own little genre, right? So I have The Gift and the Defender is an allegory, Christian allegory. Finding the Truth in Story is a commentary. Come In, We Are Closed is kind of a doctrinal dialogue. It's fiction, but it's fiction that's teaching doctrine and practice. And so it's all about closed communion. I think the readers will enjoy it. It's short. It's meant to be able to be consumed within one, maybe two sittings. The idea, the whole goal behind it was that a reader could digest it really quickly. And so it's short on purpose, and it's very lay friendly. I try to boil the doctrine behind closed communion down to a very readable, ingestible story.
Why don't you, you know, I love the book, and it's a, the way you went about explaining this and how the sacrament of communion should be performed, if you will, was wonderful, because I think it's, why don't you tell a little bit about more about what is closed communion? I mean, quite frankly, I never liked the phrase myself. I wish there was another phrase that we were using, but your explanation via fiction, via this dialogue, was the best, and maybe not for the theologians out there, but certainly for me as a layman, was the best explanation I've ever come across. And it really clarifies, I think, the thinking on this. But why don't you tell us very quickly, what is closed communion first?
Yeah, this is the practice of taking communion is not something that just anybody and everybody gets to do. And this is the practice of reserving communion, taking the Lord's Supper for those who are of the church, of the same faith, and who are making that confession together. And so in the LCMS, Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, where I'm a pastor, we are a closed communion denomination, meaning that we ask that if you take communion with us, that you are, you know what we teach, you know what we teach is in accord with God's word, and that you yourself make that confession too. And so the goal is that we're all in a unity. We're all saying the same thing. We're all receiving the one body of Christ. And so it really is kind of common sense, because it's about communion, being in community with one another, being one with one another. That's kind of a really quick rundown of what
yes.
communion is, and also closed communion. So in the evangelical world, people might not be familiar with a church body that restricts who can participate, because in many of the evangelical churches out there, anyone can take communion, even with a very minimal, even maybe no explanation of what it is. I know that from experience, you know, going to evangelical churches before I was a Lutheran. You come into church and you sit down, and all of a sudden there's bread and grape juice being passed around and you're just participating. There's not really a lot of education that goes on. And it, you know, not to go too far into the doctrine of it, but it is a reflection of what is being taught about what's happening. In the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod, we teach that communion, body and blood of Jesus, are truly present in, with, and under the bread and wine. In a lot of those evangelical churches, it's just a representation. And so it stands to reason that there wouldn't need to be a lot of education, because it's just a representation. There's not actual things happening. It's a picture.
Right.
Where for us,
right.
there's actual things happening. And if there's actual things happening, there are actual consequences to them.
Right. And as I said, I think this is, it's the best explanation I've read it. And quite frankly, I would urge, no matter what denomination you happen to be, pick up this book, because it's a wonderful education through this fascinating dialogue. And I think, you know, I'm a member of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod as well. I think many of our fellow Lutherans could use this. And you know what? It occurs to me, I grew up Roman Catholic, and I think I don't think I'm incorrect in saying that, you know, officially the Roman Catholic teaches a closed communion as well. But I think most, most Roman Catholics don't understand why. So I think right. it would actually help them as well.
Yeah. And so, I intentionally wrote this I've heard some of the reviews have mentioned how it's a great Lutheran explanation of the sacrament, but really I wrote it intentionally with language that it's open for any sacramental church to use it. It's not just
yes.
Lutheran. So any,
I would agree with
yeah,
that.
Yeah. And that was part of the goal. So I'm glad you mentioned that, Ray, that, Roman Catholics, Episcopalians, I mean, anybody with a sacramental understanding should be able to use this as a tool to teach what close communion is about.
Agree. And now, you know, you mentioned before how you've written in different, genres, as a, you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
if you will. And that speaks well of you as an author. That's fantastic. And so let's jump over to one of these other areas. And why don't you give us a quick rundown on the world of the Wazzlewoods?
Yeah, this is a fun one too, because this is I mentioned the three other genres. This one's a children's chapter book with pictures, one picture per chapter, illustrated by the great Edward Riojas, a great Lutheran artist, if your audience knows him. If not, they need to check him out, edwardriojas.com, I believe. But this is a children's chapter book, and it's not necessarily theological at all. I mean, you can't take the author's worldview out of his writing. It's always there. But I didn't intentionally set out to write a Christian children's chapter book. It's just a chapter book for children. And it's actually based on my life here in Ferndale. So it's inspired by my town. I live in a very, what I call storybook town. It's very picturesque, very Norman Rockwell, old Victorian architecture. It's nestled in the redwoods next to the ocean. I mean, there's so much going on. It's just a beautiful place. And having lived here for a year, I was constantly inspired by it. And being a guy who loves to write in fiction, my imagination was just going wild. And I was kind of happened, as C.S. Lewis describes, you know, you don't write a story for a certain audience in the sense of like, I'm going to sit down and write a children's chapter book. No, I sat down to write a story. And then I noticed that the best genre for the story was a children's chapter book. You know, I wasn't. Mm-hmm. It could have easily been an adult book, but adults may not gravitate toward little wooden characters, little figures that are coming to life, and you know, birds with armor on and things like that. So, the best vehicle for this story that I wanted to tell was in the genre of children's chapter book.
Well, again, it's a delightful read. You know, do you have an age group in mind in particular
the perfect audience would be someone in the second to fourth grade. That's the reading level, and that's kind of the interest level too. But anyone around there, it's meant to be an early reader, so someone who's just getting into chapter books. But it's also, I had so much fun reading this. I actually had my wife read it to the family so I could listen to her. But I had so much fun listening to my wife read it to my 15-year-old and 13-year-old and myself. So none of us were involved in, or none of us are in that second to fourth grade level, but we all enjoyed it. So it's a great family read aloud book too.
Neat. I like that. All right. So let's jump over. You mentioned a little bit about, you know, how you think about, writing and stories, mentioning C.S. Lewis. I think we may have touched on this the last time you were on the show, but I always think it pays to do this. I'd love to just give me a rundown on your writing process. Again, this is a show called Authors and Entrepreneurs. So what's your you know, roll up your sleeves writing process? Give us a flavor.
Yeah. So it kind of starts with the idea, the inspiration, and I typical kind of maybe classical author. I have a book ideas notebook that I always have with me, a small little journal type book that I can stuff in my backpack. So I write down the ideas as they come to me, and I kind of just incubate them for a while. And then when I finally get the idea that I can move on, I start what they call the plot clock. I lay out my plot. I brainstorm my plot using a diagram. It's a circle. The plot clock is divided into four quadrants, you know, up and down and side to side. And then it kicks off with something that launches the character out of their normal world. So you kind of have this beginning with a normal world, and then you launch into the fun of the story. And they're propelled forward. There's trials and challenges. And in the first half of the book, give or take, more or less, is failing these challenges. You know, your protagonist is failing it. And then there's a low point, a very low point in the story. And then all of a sudden something happens. I like to kind of use Star Wars as a typical example of this. You know, Luke Skywalker is trying to learn how to use the Force in the first movie, the original movie. And he gets to this low point when Yoda's teaching him. You know, if you can picture that scene where he has Yoda in the backpack and he's flipping over the logs and all that kind of stuff. And he's struggling to know how to use the Force. And then there's this wisdom that Yoda gives him. That's at the very lowest point for Luke. And then he still has many more trials and challenges throughout the story. as he goes into the third act, the third part of this plot clock. But now he's starting to learn from his trials and challenges. He's starting to gradually pass the challenges. And then that builds up, and that's kind of your rising action of your plot to the point where you get to the climax. And you can picture Luke and Darth Vader battling it out. The climax happens, and then the protagonist wins or whatever, and the story ends, and you get out of town. So that's basically the format I use with all my stories as I'm trying to put the pieces together. I'm doing it based on this plot clock idea to try to tell a good rounded story where things parallel and all the pieces fit and nothing's left hanging. So that's my basic brainstorm session right there.
And as you get into the writing process,
yep,
how much changes along the way?
Almost everything.
I'm always curious to ask that of fellow authors, because I want to know how much, you know, is it similar to my experience where all of a sudden you're, you know, you might even have, like, I'm in the midst of writing the next, I just started writing the next Pastor Stephen Grant book. And, you know, at chapter three, I was like, oh, hey, why didn't I think of this character before? Fits perfectly here and so on and so on, and adds A, B, and C to the story and so on. So I'm always curious as to how much of that process, that organic process, as I like to call it, other authors experience.
Yeah. And, you know, that plot clock idea is to your point, you're talking about, it's kind of like putting up the skeleton. It's just putting up the basic bare bones. And then as I actually start writing, the shape of that human being can take, you know, all kinds of different looks, right? It doesn't have to look the exact same way. That book can become, huge, it can become small, it can become tall, it can become small, you know, all that kind of stuff. Definitely takes on its own flavor. And I, you know, as I've been doing some research, trying to become a better writer myself, you know, not having all the answers, of course, looking and reading and researching how other authors do this, I kind of come on this idea that most authors do a plot clock kind of thing in their brain. And as you get more and more adept at your craft, you just kind of do it naturally. You know, it's part of the thought process behind writing fiction. Whether you're putting it out on paper or not, it's there, it's happening.
I think that's true, because I have come across authors who get I never use, an outline or anything like that. They almost get indignant, but I think you're absolutely right that, you know, in their brain, this is how.
Yeah, it's there somewhere. Yeah, to some degree or not, or you know, it's there vaguely or bullet points or something. It's there. First book, The Gift and the Defender, was just by the seat of my pants, and that's why I'm really been trying to discipline myself to write by that plot clock idea and to flesh everything out first, because that first book of mine, and I don't know how it is with you, reading Pastor Stephen Grant, I love that. That's not your first book. What was your first book, Ray? Let me ask you that question real fast.
Well, actually, Warrior Monk was the first fiction.
But what did you write before that?
Policy Things with Numbers.
Oh, okay.
Very exciting.
But you know,
I wrote three books, and I'll give you the titles. Okay. DC by the Numbers, New York by the Numbers, and the U.S. by the Numbers. And after I finished the third one, I pledged to my wife that the next book would have more words than numbers. So I took a break for a while, and then, you know, finally got around to writing books that, again, had more words than numbers. So there you go.
Did your book with based on Chuck, the TV show, did that come before Warrior Monk?
Actually, no. Warrior Monk came first. And then Chuck versus the Business World. And then I got back to Root of All Evil for Pastor Stephen Grant.
Okay. So, yeah. Yeah. You know, when I look at The Gift and the Defender, I imagine lots of authors do this, but I'm kind of horrified to look at it. Just because I know my writing level at that point, I know some of the things that I didn't know and they all haunt me, you know?
Right. You know, it's funny that I think that it's, you know, I listen, I had, oh my goodness, 20 plus years experience as a newspaper columnist. You know, I write policy stuff, blah, 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 blah. But the point is I write a lot of things, but I'll tell you, I guess it's natural, but the thing that those other things kind of are just what I do. I enjoy them tremendously. Don't get me wrong. But when people attack them, it's almost like, you know, well, I wrote newspaper columns. They're supposed to do that. And I kind of like and enjoy the debate, and I engage in the same thing on the policy front. But writing fiction was very different in the sense that, you know, the insecurities without a doubt are there.
That's right.
And I, you know, listen, you know what? Go back and because I had this experience. I'm not going to tell the audience why, but I went back and reread Warrior Monk for the first time in a very, very long time. And I went in fearing what I was going to read. And I kind of came out at the end. I was like, yeah, all right. You know, that wasn't as bad as I thought it was. So, but that's, you know, you're always, you should be, I think, your
worst critic, right?
Your best critic, if you will. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's why my writing process now is so I'm trying to be so disciplined, because I'm trying to make sure when I go back and look at these things later, they kind of stand the test of time for myself, you know, my little time frame.
And you know, that word, I think I touched on this in one of the previous episodes, or I wrote about it somewhere. My memory fails me, but the idea that people have this, they don't see the words discipline and creativity going together.
Oh, okay.
But they do. You have to be disciplined. The more disciplined you are in the right sense of the word, the better writer you're going to be and the more creative you're going to be. So I think you're absolutely spot on.
Oh, good.
With
all right. Well, now I know I'm right.
No, no, yeah, right. one other thing on your writing front. What's the more... if you want to say meat and potatoes, you know, when do you write? Where do you write?
So then I sit down at the keyboard. I just start mashing away. What I end up doing is I'm kind of this is where the discipline goes out the window, because I can't control my time. I end up just eat, sleep, breathe, writing. When I have a book, when I'm inspired to write, it seems like it's all I do. And I'm working on it, working on it, working on it. In fact, Come In, We're Closed, I was writing it during Advent last year. And as you know, for pastors, Advent and Christmas is not a time to be taking on extra projects. And I was just consumed by this book. And so in my waking hours, I was writing it. And so I write it out in a, you know, first draft, that kind of thing. That's kind of standard. Punch it all out, get the whole story down, dirty, you know, nothing clean. Just, I mean, ignoring the red squiggly lines on the screen, just pushing it out as fast as I can. And then I come back and I start the rewriting process and start editing it. And at that time, like with The Gift and the Offender, I started adding chapters in my rewriting. I had a better idea, like you were saying, you know, like, oh, why didn't I think of that character before? And I got to plug him in here, and
right,
here, and
right.
here, and here. Now with Come In, We're Closed, and with The Wazzlewoods, that didn't happen, but it did happen with The Gift and the Offender. And I've been blessed with these last two books with some collaborative help as, they're independently published. They're working, you know, I'm working on my own. I even have my own label going with them, but my wife is still a huge help. And these two wonderful people on the other side of the continent, by the name of Ray and Beth, have been huge helps in my editing process, being first readers and, helping me clean up my manuscript. So thank you, sir, for that, being a part of that process.
Any help.
I think it's important. It's really important, especially for indie authors, to try to have a community around them, to try to have people that they can collaborate with in their projects, to be other eyeballs on the text. Because if we're so close to it, you know, when you would send me back my manuscript, I had, by the time I got back what you had saw, I'd already been through the book several, you know, 5-7 times, and I was still, oh yeah, I missed that. I'm so glad Ray caught it. Yep. So that's important. To produce quality work on an independent level, that's important. That's part of my writing process. For Come In, We're Closed, For World of the Wazzlewoods, I had a really fun addition, first time I ever did it, to my writing process, and that was a proofing party. I invited over people.
I wanted to, I'm glad you brought that up. I wanted to ask you about that. I wasn't sure what it was. No, go ahead, because I was going to ask about, was it a, I couldn't remember if it was a proofing party, an editing party. So tell us a little bit about
so
that.
So I waited to the stage of the process where I had author copies in my hand. I had proof copies, and I ordered five of them. And then I invited over four other people that could read it with me. And in this case, they were people from the community. And in the world of the Wazzlewoods, it takes place in my town, and it takes place involving some businesses in town. So the Golden Gate Mercantile, I invited the owners of the Golden Gate Mercantile to come and read the book with me. And the Old Steeple, I invited the owners of the Old Steeple to come. So that I wanted them to know how I was representing them, one thing. And then I also wanted them to be able to help me edit and proof on the fly. So my wife and I cooked up some, you know, snack foods and had some wine and beverages and things like that. And we all sat around. Again, my wife did the reading. She's really good at reading, like in a library setting, like reading for kids. And so it was, she was natural at that. Plus, the world of the Wazzlewoods is narrated by the female character, so it kind of gave life to the character. Mm-hmm. And I was able to take notes when someone would say, oh, you messed something up there, there's a grammatical error there, or even some, not just copywriting like that, but content. Like, wait, I'm confused. What happened there? I got lost. And so, I need to tighten that up a little bit. I need to fix that story, that hole in the plot. And so, yeah, we made, because it's a children's book, the six adults that were here, including myself, we were able to get through it in a couple hours with laughter and joy and some food and fellowship and that sort of thing. And at the same time, we were cleaning up a otherwise messy book. It was great. Great experience.
That's two things crossed my mind. First, I was thinking of, you know, the Inklings at a certain level, right? With Lewis and Tolkien and their friends, you know, offering parts of their, what they were writing, their stories, and their friends, seeing if it would, you know, if it would withstand the test of those folks. But tell me a little bit more about this. I mean, in a sense, you're, was your local chamber of commerce involved? I'm trying to remember exactly, but so you have this chamber, you have some of the local businesses. I know you've done at least one book signing at what, your local bookstore in town
there? Yeah, this is interesting. Because both of you,
because I think again, this is, let me just because this is something that is, I think, a little outside the box for most writers, but it's intriguing and might, you know, germinate some thought amongst others.
Yeah, this is really cool. And this is me beginning to learn how to do this. I'm really excited, actually, about this shifts from writing process to launching process and marketing process. And I would love to hear your feedback as an entrepreneur and economist and things like that. But both of these books, I had to take two very different approaches to. So let's start with the world of the Wazzlewoods, because you were talking about the Chamber of Commerce, and that's absolutely right. I partnered with my local Chamber of Commerce. I'm a member of it. I go to the meetings. In fact, I'm the secretary of the chamber. And this is kind of what was inspiring this idea, is I would walk. I live in this, like I said, very quaint town. It's a mile wide by a mile wide, small little town, and I walk to these places. And I'm walking down Main Street, and I'm seeing the architecture. I'm seeing the beauty. I'm seeing all these cool things. I'm inspired. I go to the meeting. I hear the businesses talk about what they love about town, what they're doing, what their efforts are, how they're trying to get people to come. And that's where the book clicked. Like, hey, I could write a story. I don't have much else to offer the chamber, but I can write a story and I could use it as a marketing tool. So I approached them. I approached the chamber and asked, you know, if they would be interested in a product. They were very excited about the idea that a local author would write a book that is specifically targeting, it's celebrating our community, but it's targeting an audience outside the community to make them want to come here. It's a promotional thing. And so they were like, yeah, let's see how that goes. Let's just kick the can down. And, you know, I think there might've been a little bit of caution. I don't think anybody from the chamber had read anything that I had written already. They didn't know what kind of author I was, if it would be good. In fact, I think one of the members of the chamber said, yeah, as long as it, it's not bad. I think that was his nice. I hope it doesn't. You know, I hope it's not awful. But then, and that was really for anybody who's listening who wants to try to go this route. I was very particular, and I am with all my books. I'm very particular about the presentation, about the cover design, about the typesetting inside, about the whole nine yards. And I especially wanted to do this book because I wanted to show them that this is a top quality product. And that's also why I waited for that proofing party. I waited to have proof copies in my hand so they would have a sense of what the product would look like, because I was asking them to partner with me to promote a product. I wanted to have them have that in their hands. And I think the strategy was well received. They appreciated being able to flip the pages. And in fact, from the proofing party, we actually made some product changes, you know, some layout design on the front, on the back, some things that people thought were too small, some, you know, the logo was maybe a little fuzzy, like this kind of stuff like that. So it was good. I think it was a good idea. But it also got, and this has always been my strategy with all my books to some degree or another. I think when you can get other people vested in the product, then what you've done is expand your audience. Other people are out there hustling your book, right? So for the first book I ever wrote, The Gift and the Defender, I had Edward Riojas do the painting. I commissioned him to do the cover, hoping and praying that now he would have something that he would want to tell his friends about. You know, just coffee. Like, oh yeah, I just painted a picture for this cover. Oh, what's the book? It's A Gift from the Defender. Now that was just a promotional opportunity. So I wanted the chamber to do the same thing. Yep. And they have. They've been doing that. We've partnered with them. It was great. The newspaper is part of the chamber. And the local newspaper ran an article, but not just an article. They have this little, I don't know what you call it. You would know from your days in the newspaper business. But there's little like strip across the top between the name of the newspaper and the first page headlines. There's this little strip, and every week they have a little phrase in there. And the week that my article came out, it said Ferndale is the home of the Wazzlewoods. So it was like this the whole community was kind of embracing it. And then from that chamber experience also, the bookstore said we would love to coordinate the launch of the book with our busiest night of the year, which is Hospitality Night, November 30th, as we kick off our Christmas season. For those who are in the church, not the official Christmas season, the marketing Christmas season. and so, yeah, I partnered with
every pastor I know has to make that point.
yeah. I don't want anyone to say he doesn't even know the Christmas season. For marketing. But you know, the bookstore is a member of the chamber, and we were able to make that relationship happen, which was really cool because my book was the best book signing she has had to date, sold the most of my copies of my books, but also sold the most product in her store. So it generated traffic.
Fantastic.
And as we're coming, that was about November 30th. So here we are almost Christmas. We have sold out of copies. There's no more Ferndale fairy tale books in town right now. Well, we had to make another order, so that's a great thing. People are coming to,
that's
which is really good. And I have a feeling that it's just been a really good boost to the bookstore's business this whole Christmas season. So, very proud of that, to be able to serve my neighbor in a way like that. From the pastor side of my heart is just huge. That's a success for me right there. Nobody else could ever buy any more books, and I would say that's a success.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Congratulations on that. That's it's a great example of people in a community, people in the marketplace working with each other and creating benefits. The economist in me loves that.
Well, and I'm hoping, you know, going into 2019, you know, we got through the Christmas rush and the opening of this thing, but now, like, you know, you never stop marketing your book. You're always promoting it as you're moving forward. And so now the goal is, starting in January, to take my books, The World of the Wazzlewoods, and distribute them in visitor centers all up and down the Redwood Corridor. So anytime someone stops at a visitor center for the Redwoods, hopefully they'll be able to pick up a copy of The World of the Wazzlewoods, which will inspire them, we hope, to make a little effort to drive across our bridge, because we're 5 miles off the beaten path, and go see what this, you know, what this little town is all about after having read the book.
Yeah, so that's the next stage of the partnership. I love that.
Yep. Yeah, lots of fun. Good. Lots of good stuff.
That's fantastic. Let's also talk about, you know, you had a proofing party. You also have had, I'm not sure exactly what you called it. Was it a launch team?
Yeah, so that's what I mean by two completely different marketing plans. So for Come In, We're Closed, I live in a very small town, and I don't have a huge church audience, ecclesiastical readership in my town. And so I knew not a lot of people would be buying Come In, We're Closed here locally. So this was going to be a book that would appeal to Lutheran Church Missouri Synod folks across the Synod, across the country, and then hopefully as time goes on, all sacramental churches as the word gets out. So to launch this one, I put together a launch team. I invited people to apply for it. So I put a thing on my website where they actually had to tell me the reason why they wanted to be on the team. You know, after giving a promotional little spiel about what the book was about, you know, why are you interested in what this book is about and what do you bring to the team? And a lot of people who joined it were, you know, very interested in getting a clear teaching out there about closed communion. So they had the right motivation. And I capped it at 25 people simply because of my, again, being an independent author, my budget. What I did was I sent each one a paperback copy. And some other authors have done this, but they tend to send out ebooks. Again, I thought, the best way to get people very fired up and zealous for promoting the product, not just the story, but the product itself, is to let them hold it, let them have it in their hands. And so I'm a big advocate of sending out the paperback, even though it cost me a little more. So I did that, sent out 25 copies. And this was after all of the proofing and everything's done. Everything's ready to launch. The product they have in their hand is a final product. And had them read it the month before, had some snafus with the printing services, which is a whole nother story, but we managed to survive, and set up a Facebook group where the 25 of us, the 26 of us, counting myself, could engage and talk about the story. And actually I could kind of build up some excitement about launch day. And to do that, I created a little game that they could play, a contest. And I offered to send 25 copies any church that the winner of this contest wanted. And the contest, you earned points. So when you made a post on Facebook, you got a point. If you made a post that was a picture, you got 2 points. I don't remember exactly how my point system broke down, but you know, if you blogged it, if you emailed it, all these sorts of things. And then every night I try to tally up the points and let the team know who was in the lead. And, just build up that fun and make it exciting for people. That's one thing I think authors need to remember, is that we love our books to the moon, right? It's part of us. It's an extension of who we are. We put it out there, blood, sweat, tears. But for someone who's helping you, they don't have that emotional attachment to it. I was trying to create some fun, some excitement for why they would want to promote. And I think it was, I mean, by far, it was the most successful thing I've done in my author career. We had 25 people posting. Another part of it, the big part of it was they had to also post an Amazon review. Not that they had to post a positive review. They had to be honest. You know, if they read the book and they thought it was awful, I'd have to suck it up and take a 1-star review, you know. But it worked out well. They posted their reviews on Amazon, on Goodreads, which they also got points for. And they were, oh my goodness, the team was dynamic, and I couldn't have asked for better people on it. They promoted it. They got the word out there. I had some wonderful snowball effects happening that are still happening, and my sales have been great. The word is getting out about closed communion, about this book. I just, Ray, I can't tell you how excited I am about coming where clothes. And what I learned as, I mean, you're talking entrepreneurial all the time. I'm learning the entrepreneurial stuff. I'm still picking up these pieces and, you know, learning how being an author is being in business for yourself. Such a thrill. When the launch week was over, I was like, okay, what do I got to do next? What's the next book? Come on, let's launch it. Let's get it. I was just on fire for it, you know? It was fun. A lot of fun.
One of the things that has truly surprised me in this fiction process, funny it didn't happen with my By the Numbers books, but has been the reaction of at least a small group, however you want to define it, you know, of readers who just embrace your books in a way that to me was totally unexpected. Sure. And how they're willing to do, you know, I have not, and believe me, I will take our conversation here and think about, you know, how I can apply all these things to my upcoming books. But even without doing this kind of, you know, planned out official launch team effort, I'm amazed at what people, because they love your books, will do for you. And that's just been a wonderful part of this entire experience. And it's, you know, I greatly appreciate it. I'm regularly taken off guard by it. So it's good stuff. But that's that launch team idea. I wanted to make sure we covered that because I thought it was a very neat idea. That along with, you know, previously what you mentioned about working with the businesses in your town and so on. Let me ask you very quickly on another, you admit, and if you don't want to talk about it, you're not ready to talk about it, that's fine. But I know you've at least started the process of an audio edition for one of your books. I don't know if you want to mention it or not, but so you're just starting that. I kind of dipped my toe in these waters going back probably 2 years ago, and time just has pushed it to the back burner. So it's still there, but it's you know, it's just got to be pushed up on my to-do list. But tell me a little bit. Share a little bit if you'd like about this early process.
Yeah, it's definitely early, but I'm working with the idea that Audible is a huge thing, right? I mean, we're becoming a culture that doesn't read. You know, we're not illiterate, we're illiterate. So many people are not reading for themselves, and that's this Audible thing is great. I do it when we go on vacation. We always listen to books on tape, so to speak, as we're driving. And so for me, I was looking at this as a whole nother market of people who, if I can get this message out, a whole other part of my readership. And it was really, it kind of just hit me with For Come In, We're Closed, because it's such a simple book. It's a conversation between two people. I thought, well, this can't be that hard to make into an audio book. It doesn't have a lot of the normal novel stuff. And so I'm starting with it. And if it's successful, what I learn is easy to do and I can manage it, I'm going to go and do it with my other three books too. But I'm using a service through Amazon, again, capitalizing on the big guys. Like you are such an advocate of promoting. I love that idea. Using Amazon for the independent small business, right? So using Amazon service, which is putting me in contact with narrators, what they call producers on Amazon, what I did was I uploaded two pages of sample material out of my book. So I went through and I found actually I have three speaking parts. I have the two people in the dialogue and a waitress who comes up and talks to them. So I found a section where all three of those characters are in the scene. And then I also found a section where I had some more complicated words, biblical type words. And I submitted that. I posted it on ACX is the Amazon company that does it. And then producers can audition. They will read my two pages as if they were reading it for the book. And I can listen to how they inflect the characters and how they pronounce the words and, you know, whether I like their voice or not. And it's very, very detailed. What I've found so far is you can select, I mean, exactly the accent of the American accent, like mid-American, Southern American, very detailed. Mm-hmm. You can filter it for articulate or inspirational or comedic or horror or childlike. And so you can really start to narrow down what kind of reader you're looking for. So what I'm going to end up doing, if things work out, is doing a royalty share where I'll split my profits 50-50 with the reader. So there's no upfront cost for me, which to me makes sense from a business standpoint. I mean, maybe you could correct me if I'm wrong, Ray. Please do. But I'm making no money by not doing it. I might as well make some money by doing it.
No, you're absolutely right, and that's what got me thinking originally. And actually, I received some auditions back, and I was impressed with them. But it's just been a matter, as I said, one of those things with me that it just has not found. I have not found a spot to wedge, the at least the upfront time effort. But I'm glad you're doing that, and I'm looking forward to seeing. The first one out of the shoot. So it's, and shame again, it's a shame on me type of thing, because I do periodically get questions, for example, on the Pastor Stephen Grant Novels Facebook page about, are you going to do this as an audiobook and so on. And it's just, I have to answer yes, but I don't know when yet. Yeah. So,
well, for me too, I'm also trying to, build my ratings, my reviews on Amazon. And it's one more, since it's an Amazon company. When someone posts hopefully a 5-star review on the Audible, it'll also correspond with the paperback and the Kindle. So I'm trying to also be able to create and build my reviews, because those are so helpful for potential customers, readers. So that's another aspect of it. You have the Kindle, yep. You have the paperback, you have the Audible. That's all you can do,
Yep, exactly right. And all of the above and the reviews do matter. And I think I'm always curious about how many indie authors kind of ignore that fact. I always tell them, don't be shy about promoting your books. And part of that is, saying to people, hey, if you could take just a couple of minutes and post a review over on Amazon, it really does make a difference. And I know, listen, as a book purchaser,
yeah, me too.
I take note of
this idea on using Amazon really hit me with the. I know you've said this before, and I think you were the first one that I heard say it about capitalizing on the big business guys. Small businesses always look at Amazon and kind of go, "Oh, they're killing the industry," and that there are some truths in that. But as I've heard you say before, for us independent authors who are small business owners doing this and making it work, to capitalize on those tools that they have at our disposal. What I found with the world of the Wazzlewoods was a unique way of doing that, because now anytime someone leaves a review for the world of the Wazzlewoods, they're leaving a review that is promoting my town. They're promoting my small businesses in my town. So it's really the irony of it for me is really kind of cool that I want to point people to the Amazon, not to kill my my local bookstore, but to further support my local bookstore, which is really weird.
Right, and that's the part of the the economist in me has been dealing with this type of stuff for a very long time, and first off, you always have to understand the big businesses were at one point a small business. They became big not because somebody was forcing them. People to do it. It's because they were serving customers in a way that added value. But what's the key for the entrepreneur is, how can I, in a certain sense, maybe piggyback somebody like Amazon or, for the local brick and mortar, Walmart opened up in town right now. You can complain about that. I know a lot of people will, but we all actually wind up shopping there as well, and there's a reason why. But the small businesses that understand what they can offer that Walmart can't, because Walmart can't offer certain things, especially the personalized service, a whole host of things that Walmart's just not geared to do. That's not their gig, and that's what entrepreneurs do. They identify those niches and they fill them. Or they create new ones. And the wonderful thing about Amazon is that they give you these tools as a small business owner, as an indie author, but it's not just authors. You know, you can, a whole host of small businesses sell their goods through Amazon. So it's a great way to reach an audience that before it would have been unimaginable, quite frankly. So it is, there are a whole host of benefits out there. If you're thinking like you are, quite frankly, are you thinking innovatively? Are you thinking in ways that, you know, this can be a plus for my efforts as an author, a business owner, and so on. So, all right, let me get off my comments.
I got to learn so much. I'm taking notes right now.
Listen, anything else that you want to mention, you know, in terms of what we've been talking about? And then I'm going to, well, go ahead. Anything else in the mix that you want to toss out very quickly? Otherwise, I'm going to go over to one more thing
Let's go there.
All right. Well, you know, you're a pastor. You love your community. You're working with your Chamber of Commerce, and you're a wonderful author. And I have to point out that you are a wonderful creator of book covers. And I think I posted on Facebook recently that, you know, people have asked me, hey, you've stepped up your game on your book covers. What's going on? I said, yeah, that's because I'm not doing them anymore, because Ty Bramwell's doing them. And if you look at my last three books, you know, Reagan Country and Heroes and Villains and Shifting Sands, yeah, the game has been stepped up, and it's all because of you. And I have to compliment you on the skills, your artistry at creating book covers. Great stuff. And I want to say thank
you. It is a pleasure to be of service and to help. I love what you do, Ray, and I like being a part of it, honestly. Just have the privilege of saying, yes, I'm helping.
Well, it's much appreciated. And obviously, I'm going to plug that your books are at Amazon, but where else can people find you online?
I'm on Facebook. So Facebook, Tyrell Bramwell, / Tyrell Bramwell, Instagram as well, Twitter as well. Although I got to be honest, I'm not that up on Twitter because it's too fast for me. It moves too quickly. But the big one is TyrellBramwell.com, TyrellBramwell.com. People can buy books straight from there. In fact, I'm hoping to, in January, start making it available where people can buy, especially for Coming We're Closed. If a church wants to order a number of books at one time for a Bible study or a book study, that they can get them at a discounted price. So that, look for that in January. And that'll be only through my Tyrell Bramwell store, TyrellBramwell.com store. That's where you'll find me. Those are the main places. If I can get some followers on Facebook and Instagram, I love to post pictures and things that are going on in Ferndale. I have this kind of monster I've created for myself. Maybe it's a setback for my author, representation, because I'm working in so many different fields. I'm working with the church. You know, I'm trying to promote my books in the Missouri Synod and in the church. And I'm also trying to promote my books in Ferndale and Humboldt County, California. And so if you come by, the positive spin on it is, if you come by Facebook, you come by Instagram, what you'll see is kind of a feed that is almost personal. You know, it's not just professional. You'll get to know me a little more. So yeah, come by, like me on Facebook, follow me, Instagram, Twitter if you want, just for the sake of doing it. I'd appreciate it.
Well, it's fantastic. You know what? People want to today know, you know, I've talked about this before. It's a different world with social media, and people appreciate that personal aspect of it. They really do. I mean, they don't want to, you know, I'm sure most of my novel readers don't want to hear, you know, or read my, you know, economist rants and things like that, but they appreciate, those types of things, those personal aspects. So I think you're doing great stuff, very much. And thank you again for coming on a second time.
I would come on anytime. You let me know, and we could talk about, the Vikings if you want, or the Reds.
Well, if you want to get me depressed, I could talk about my sports teams. That's true. Although, you know, not really your backyard, because California is a big state. I am a San Jose Sharks hockey.
That's as close as it gets for hockey for us.
But anyway,
we actually have no hockey behind the Redwood Curtain, as they say. We are.
Yeah, I was like, I actually looked at one point to see how far is Ty from San Jose. And I was like, yeah, California is a big state. So that was my conclusion. Anyway, yeah, so I root on my Vikings, I root on my Reds, and I survived those things as a sports fan. But again, thanks so much for coming on. I appreciate it. And you may regret saying
anytime that you're willing to come back. Thanks for having me, Ray.
All right, I appreciate it. Again, folks, go over to Amazon.com to get Ty's wonderful books. And of course, while you're there, hey, you might want to grab a Pastor Stephen Grant novel or short story. Just like Ty, the books are available in paperback and for the Kindle. Thanks for tuning in. Please like us on Facebook at Pastor Stephen Grant Novels and at Authors and Entrepreneurs. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. And please tune into another podcast of mine, Free Enterprise in 3 Minutes. And again, you can listen and subscribe at iTunes. Don't forget DisneyBizJournal.com. And until the next installment of Ray Keating's Authors and Entrepreneurs podcast, enjoy reading, enjoy writing, and enjoy entrepreneurship. God bless and take care.